Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and if you have not yet seen the documentary Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin, you should go fix that right now. It's been on PBS since August 2nd, and you can actually stream it, watch the video stream of it on PBS's website until, I believe it's August 30th. My guest today is Arwin Curry, the director of the documentary, and the movie is an exploration and part celebration of a science fiction fantasy grandmaster who was so much more than just a science fiction and fantasy author. And she got to spend 10 years with Ursula, documenting everything, talking to her, working with authors who have been inspired to their own greatness by reading her as when they were children. So, Arwin, thank you so much for this gift and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Summer.
So, where did the impetus, what inspired you to want to tell Le Guin's story?
Well, Le Guin had been in my consciousness and my life since I was a kid. And so she was always kind of in there. And when I began to think about what I wanted to do, kind of do with my life, and I was going back to school, I went to journalism school at UC Berkeley, and I was thinking about stories that I wanted to tell. Whose story was it? You know, what was it that I really wanted to share with people? And it had come out of some conversations with some friends that, you know, I wanted to share the stories of feminists who had come before me in the arts. And it sort of connected with me, this voice of Ursula's that had always kind of been with me. And I thought, that's it. That's who I want to speak with. It was a somewhat surprising decision to make a film since that wasn't my background. But I really did want to share that experience of speaking with her in person. There's something about listening and watching a writer speak in person that's different than encountering them on the page. And it can add a different dimension to, you know, their own story, their context, and their humanity. So that's how I kind of decided to pursue that. And that was all before, you know, I actually met Ursula and started the project.
So was there one particular story of hers that, I guess, lit the spark that would inspire this decision years later? Like, which story spoke to you the most, stuck with you the most?
Well, I think like many of the people in the documentary, Earthsea was really the place that I first traveled to in Ursula's work. And that same connection, that same brilliant connection between writers and wizards that some of the interviewees talk about in the film was really captivating to me, as I think it is to a lot of writers or people who kind of know that they should be writers, know that they are, you know, that they are at core writers. This idea that, you know, you can bring something into the world that wasn't there before using words in the same way that Ged does in Earthsea. So that book was really influential for me. And then as far as her other novels, I also read The Lathe of Heaven, which also completely entranced me, this idea that, you know, a person's dreams could change reality and no one else would know it. And so that reality would kind of constantly be shifting. So that was a different kind of experience, but both of them really drew me deeply into her work.
Yeah, it's fascinating because everybody I've talked to over the years, it seems that either Wizard of Earthsea or Left Hand of Darkness was the first story of hers that they read. For me, Lathe of Heaven was the first one. And like you said, that concept that someone's dreams is building the world we see around us and we have no idea about it. And then you have people trying to manipulate those dreams. And it's just mind-blowing is the only word you can use.
Yeah.
And it's
very cosmic.
and you got to speak to people like Margaret Atwood, Michael Chabon, Neil Gaiman, and find out from them what was it about her work that inspired and influenced them, the how those stories touched them at a moment when they were discovering their own desire to tell stories. And that, just seeing that, just the hints of the very ripple effects that were out there. I mean, Samuel Delaney has touched so many people, you can't even count. And hearing all of these people talk about her work and what it did for them, to me, was just both humbling and compelling.
Yeah, it is. I tried to strike a balance between different generations in the film, because I think they encountered her in somewhat different ways. And there was impact for each of these generations, but it was, you know, inflected a little bit differently. And so, you know, for someone like Samuel Delaney, he's in the film talking about what it was like to be in the middle of the exciting kind of science fiction scene of the mid-60s, and to sort of watch her emerge and realize that there was this great force that was coming, you know, and that really made people snap to attention. And then you have, you know, other contemporaries like Vonda McIntyre and Margaret Atwood, who's somewhat younger, who's a decade younger than Ursula, but was, you know, still kind of writing along with her. And that was, you know, kind of an interesting way to see what it might have been like to first, you know, become aware of her. And then you have a generation represented by writers like David Mitchell, Michael Chabon, Neil Gaiman, who were reading her when they were kids and deeply affected by her work, and kind of wove it into their own work, or wove the possibilities that she presented into their own bodies of work. And then after that, there's another generation, a younger generation, that I think took a lot of the ideas, a lot of the radical concepts in Ursula's work, and drew it into another, you know, this was after the kind of doors had been opened up a little bit. And yet there was still so much potential in these ideas. Something like Left Hand of Darkness still can make people, you know, turn their head and say, there's something here I need to follow up with. There's something here I need to tell from my own perspective. So her ability to touch people in all these different ways across all these different generations, I think, is a real indication of what will be her staying power and kind of the depth of her work, the ways that her novels reach across, you know, many different lines.
So how did you pitch this idea to her, and how did you work with her in determining what the focus of this was going to be? Because this is a compelling film from beginning to end. Even the early parts talking about her own childhood and the work her father did and how that influenced the way she looked at people and societies, which is just filtered all throughout most of her work.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, she, at the time when I approached her, which was in about 2008, was still accepting letters at a P.O. box. And I sort of followed the normal path of writing to her. She was always, you know, very generous to a fault with her time, and she made a real effort to write people back and to, you know, respond to her readers. And I, you know, I wrote her saying, this is who I am. This is what I'd like to do. And I sent her what I could, which was my, you know, a short dissertation documentary that I had and some writing that I'd done. And it was kind of all I had to show her as a new filmmaker. And, you know, I said, I'd like to do this. And at the beginning, there was a moment when, you know, she said, okay, well, that sounds interesting. And then a few months later, when I came back and said, okay, well, let's film, let's do it, she said, you know, I'm not sure I want to do this. And I don't like being in front of the camera. It's not my place of comfort. And she kind of was walking back. So I did manage to convince her to let me come over and speak with her. So I went to her house in Portland, and we sat down and talked, and I was able to, you know, meet her and explain what I had in mind. We kind of got a feel for each other. And it was at that point that she decided to move ahead with me and, you know, stayed with me for this long, incredible journey.
Did you expect that it would take 10 years to get the story you wanted?
No, I didn't. I mean, it took, you know, when I say that, when I tell people that it took 10 years, I always try to add, you know, the caveat or that to explain that, you know, documentary filmmaking is expensive if you are trying to make something with high production values. And that means that unless you're independently wealthy, you have to raise the funding, and that takes a long time. It's competitive, it's difficult. And so a lot of that was just getting the funding, the budget, raising the budget, which was done. It's a kind of chicken and egg thing. You need a little money to make a good trailer, to have some, you need to be able to shoot, to have something to show, and you need that trailer in order to raise more money, and so on and so forth. So eventually we did get it, and that was a lot of the delays. And some of the delays were things in my own life. You know, I had two kids during the production period and a lot of other changes. I kind of grew up in this decade in a certain way. But you know, it's much longer than I expected it would have been at the beginning. And yet, although I wish that she had been alive to see the end of the film, to see the final film, I don't regret really that it took so long, because it did allow us to kind of show the evolution of the last decade of her life, which was really a significant one. When she, you know, she was honored at the National Book Awards, she really published all these collections, and she was published in the Library of America, all these kind of real nods to her, finally, her acceptance into the mainstream American world of letters, right? So I think that had we finished the film before that happened, we really would have missed something.
Yeah, I remember when these collections of both nonfiction and short fiction started coming out. I'm like, wait, where are these coming from? And how have I never seen these before? And I grabbed quite a few of them. What is it? There was a collection from, I think, the 70s, the Wynn's 12 Quarters, I believe.
Yes.
And I found a copy of that in hardcover in a used bookstore. Didn't realize till I got home that it was signed by her. I'm like, who in the world would give this? What? But yeah, just the breadth of her work is, I don't think you can actually quantify how many writers she has touched and how many people who she's inspired to write. So this particular film, I mean, I've watched it twice already just because there's so much in there. And so thank you for sticking with it, first of all.
You're welcome.
Now, are there any segments that weren't included in the finished version that's on PBS? I think the version that's on PBS is like 55 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, the PBS American Masters version is 53 minutes. So it's about 15 minutes shorter than the feature version. We were allowed to edit it ourselves, and we didn't have to really cut out anything significant from the story that we were telling in the longer version. So it has a little, you know, it cuts off little pieces here and there, and we did a little kind of stitching together of some of the scenes, but basically it contains the same storyline. But even from the feature film, there are, you know, it's by no means like a comprehensive look at her career or her work, right? It's very much a story that I hope tells the truth of her, to the trajectory of her life, but it's a crafted story. And it, of course, it leaves a lot out, including from the work. So probably the most significant work to me is The Lathe of Heaven and what it says about her spirituality and her Taoism. I wanted so badly to fit that into the film, and yet it just didn't fit with our story. It just wasn't part of the timeline that we were telling. And every time we put it in here or there, it stuck out, it dragged, it did something that didn't quite work. So it will be on the DVD of the film. There's a whole separate scene, because it is a very important book and an important part of her life. And so it's going to be an extra on the DVD. And there are some other things like that too, that just didn't fit into the movie. And of course, I mean, if you know her work at all, or even if you don't, she is a really master essayist, a poet. She's written wonderful works of narrative fiction that's not science fiction, outside of genre. She's collaborated on all kinds of interesting projects. So there's no way that we were going to, you know, capture all of that. It's kind of out there in the world, and hopefully the film will lead people to it a little bit.
Well, the feature version is still being screened at different places around the country, and I believe that list is actually on the website worldsofukl.com, right?
That's correct, yeah. So we're screening still around the country and around the world. It's had a wonderful reception around the world, you know, various places, Eastern Europe and in Central and South America and Scandinavia and just all over. The screenings, theatrical and festival screenings, will be slowing down because of the broadcast, but we're continuing to do screenings at community spaces and, you know, small theaters and schools. So it's all of that information is on the website. And if people want to organize a screening, they can contact us through the website.
Great. Cause I personally would like to find out, how much did you talk to her about what brought her to doing a translation of the Tao Te Ching? Because that was a surprise when I saw it, when it came out, and it's so, I don't even know if I have the words. It was a different translation of it than I'd ever seen before. It was more, it was lighter, I guess is the way I can describe it. And it was more, I don't want to use the word flowery because that's not what the intent was, but there is a different look at those passages from the way she translated it. And the story of how she got there, I'm like, there's got to be 100 different reasons that happened. And the explanation in the book is not enough. I want to know more.
Well, I don't know too much about it, but I did talk with her about it briefly. And there's a little bit in the extra scene that will be on the DVD. But, you know, she had her father's copy of Lao Tzu, of the Tao Te Ching, but she had grown up seeing him consult this book. And then when she was in her 20s, he gave it to her, and she continued to consult it throughout her life. And it was a real guide for her. It was a real kind of companionship that she needed, that really resonated with her. So I think she, because of how important it was to her personally, that was a very personal endeavor to make that translation. And she was aware that it was taking certain liberties. I think she worked with a Chinese speaker since she wasn't fluent in Chinese. And she also, I think, was trying to address some of the sexism or sexist language in the original. So she did kind of take what she thought to be the meaning of Lao Tzu's words and, you know, get rid of some of the language that stood in the way for some readers. So, you know, it's a very Ursula. It's not trying to be a translation that's official. It's trying to be a translation that's from Ursula. And it succeeds, I think, at doing that.
It does. I believe it does. As I said, this is a fabulous work, especially if you're interested in storytellers and world builders of her level. And I can't wait to encourage more people to go see it. What is the schedule for the DVD release of it?
So the DVD is scheduled to come out in mid-October of 2019, so just a few months from now. That will be close to Ursula's birthday on the 21st of October. And it will be available from Grasshopper Film. That's my U.S. distributor, and I think it's grasshopperfilm.com. You can pre-order it also if you want. It has several extras, including longer versions of her speeches, and, you know, I think it's going to be a great little package.
Available from retailers everywhere, I assume, or just directly from Grasshopper?
Yeah. No, I actually think it is available from retailers. Someone sent me a link from Target, and I said, what? I didn't know you could buy this at Target. That's pretty weird. But yeah, so you can buy it from Grasshopper, and I assume you can buy it wherever you usually buy your DVDs. Cool. It will also be available streaming around that time as well from iTunes.
Nice. So is there,
and as you mentioned, for the next 20 days or so, it will be on the PBS American Masters websites streaming the shorter version.
Right, the shorter version. That's where I was able to watch it. I do encourage people to go see it because it's a, like I said, it's a fascinating look at one of the most influential writers and world builders and thinkers, probably of the past 50 years, easily.
Yeah.
And are there any other associated materials that will be coming out from this? Will there be other, I believe you had talked in the movie about one of her books that came out with a music CD.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that?
Yeah, that was, I don't think that we're going to have anything quite like that. That was Always Coming Home, her 1985, her very big novel of 1985 that came out with a cassette tape at the time and has been remastered onto CD and LP in a beautiful new package. And that's from, I think, RNVG is the name of the label. Freedom to Spend is the name of the label. And I think it's rnvg.com. It's really, they did a great job with that. As far as us, I think it's, there'll be a little bit of maybe merchandise, a movie poster, stuff like that, and just the DVD. I don't think we'll have any cross media stuff happening right now, but you know, we're always open to different possibilities. So it depends on what kinds of collaborations come up, because like Ursula, I love a collaboration.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to where people can go view this, can go pre-order the DVD. Is there anything else on your plate to start next that hopefully wouldn't take 10 more years?
I do have some things boiling up, but it hasn't quite come to the surface yet. So I'm not announcing, but stay tuned.
Okay, cool. Well, Arwen, thank you so, so much for your time today and for your dedication, commitment, and passion to get this film created and out to the rest of us.
Thank you, Summer.
The movie is Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin. You can find it at PBS and come October in your favorite place to buy DVDs. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
But seriously, if you haven't watched the documentary on Ursula K. Le Guin, Worlds of Ursula K. Le Guin, go check it out as soon as you can. The link is in the show notes, or you can just go to pbs.org and go to their American Masters page. You'll see it. You'll be able to stream it through the end of August. And if you're even casually a fan of her work, you won't be disappointed. The prizes for the previous two contests should be arriving on various people's doorsteps if they haven't already. And the August perk will also be on its way next week. We will have more contests coming up. Actually, I think the Snack Hacks contest ended, so I have to go pick a winner, find out who gets a copy of Claudia Christian's book. And we will be having a new contest coming up. I'm not exactly sure when, but you know that documentary, The Power of Grayskull, about the history of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, the entire thing from the toys to the cartoons to the movie? Well, while that documentary can be seen on Netflix right now, there's an extended edition coming out that'll be on DVD September 3rd. And we're going to have copies of that to give away, so stay tuned. I've been waiting for this movie, this documentary, ever since we talked to the director. So, Robert McCallum, the guy who did this documentary on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, is the same guy who did Nintendo Quest a few years back. So, and he mentioned it back then. Very exciting. We also have a few more action and horror directors and cast members coming up soon. So stay tuned for those. I'm trying to think what else has happened this week. I believe the anniversary of Buckaroo Banzai, which is an awesome movie. I will argue with you all day on that. That movie is so wacky. It transcends genre and just your belief in how good a bad movie can be. Yes, it did not make a whole lot of money when it was in the theaters. It didn't even achieve cult status until it hit home video, which back then was VHS. True story. I, at one time, owned Buckaroo Banzai on Laserdisc, and I refused to sell it or auction it, like put it on eBay, because I wanted it on DVD. Then I came across an article where the director said he would never, ever allow that movie to be on DVD. And I was like, oh, ye of little faith, you will be done in by your aspirations, because the movie studio will find a way. And so I took a leap of faith. I sold that Laserdisc on eBay. Jeez, it had to have been mid-90s maybe, late 90s, for $200. And sure enough, 12 years later maybe, came out on DVD. So I have that DVD, and some other happy person was able to get Buckaroo Banzai on Laserdisc at an exorbitant price. And you know how I was able to have that sort of patience? Because the same thing happened with Heavy Metal. They said the movie Heavy Metal would never be, the soundtrack would never be released on CD. The movie would never be on DVD. And that happened. It took a while, but that happened. I knew someone in college who would collect the soundtrack because she was worried she would wear it out. She had like 4 vinyl copies, 3... cassette copies. It wasn't on CD back then. CD and DVD didn't exist. They couldn't put it on those formats. And she just collected vinyl wherever she could. And I picked up a copy of it on vinyl and waited and waited and waited. And sure enough, it eventually came out on CD and DVD. And everyone was happy. So I guess that's my question. Is there a cult classic film that's a favorite of yours that took a very long time to get to DVD or Blu-ray, or still hasn't made it to DVD or Blu-ray yet, call in. Let me know. The number is 602-635-6976, or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and Player FM. And if you could, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Let people know that you are enjoying this show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and on Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And as always, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, leave comments on interviews like this, on reviews of movies, reviews of DVDs. Engage in that geeky conversation. That is life for folks like you and me. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting the show. Your patronage, your pledges, your donations. When I say they do keep things running around here, they do. And I am eternally grateful to everyone who has supported the show through the years. This show is almost 15 years old. Very, very close to 15 years now. Some people have been with us 10 years or more. And I truly am grateful to all Slice of Sci-Fi fans, old and new. So thank you again for being here. Just being here for me. The past couple of years have been very, very hard on me personally. And doing this show has been the biggest reason for me to keep going. You have no idea how much my love for doing this, for finding interesting people doing cool genre stuff to talk to, whether it be science fiction, fantasy, horror, science, technology, just people doing cool things in the science and science fiction arena. And they say, yeah, sure, we'll talk to you. And just finding out what about that project inspired them, that made it important to them to do that project. So you guys keep listening. I keep finding cool people to talk to. And we both help each other keep on keeping on. How's that? So if you do want to add your support through Patreon, through a monthly pledge, that link is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you just want to donate every now and then, that link is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. And again, thank you all to everyone who is currently supporting, and thank you in advance to you folks who choose to add your support now or later in the future. I'd like to also throw my everlasting love and a shout out to the geek rock band Sci-Fried for providing the theme music here on Slice of Sci-Fi. If you enjoy your rock and roll geek flavored, you can find more by them over at their website, sci-fried.com, or check out some of their music videos over on YouTube. Just go over there and search on Sci-Fried and prepare to be entertained. But that will do it for this episode. Again, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.